What an amazing God we serve, amen? Isn't he good to us? First of all, we're going to check how smart you are this morning. Because you're going to have to be smart for this message. Let's see if I can get this thing working. Well, it don't have battery, so it's not going to work. Triple A's, two of them. I guess I should have got y'all started before I started. How many see this? What is this called? What's the term for this, what you're seeing? Silhouettes. That's going to be important for you to understand in today's message. Silhouette. So the first one, what is it? A man. How do you know it's a man?
He's wearing a cap.
Because of the shape. That's a good one. Says the batteries are dead.
Make sure I didn't have my glasses. Make sure I put them in right.
He came on for a little while, but it says it's dead. Anyway, what's the second one? A woman. How do you know it's a woman? Because let me tell you why we know. Because we have seen women who sort of look like this. Now, we can't tell what the hair color is. We can't tell if she's wearing lipstick. But just from the shape, we're able to tell that it's a woman. From the shape, we're able to tell it's a man. Well, it gets a little harder, right? What's the next one here, the big guy there? How do you know it's an elephant? Because of the what? The shape. Shape is important. What about the next one, the real tall fella there? Giraffe. How do you know it's a giraffe? You don't see the spots on or anything, but you know that because your mind has been trained to recognize a silhouette of a giraffe, and all we're seeing is the silhouette. Now, the next one's a little tricky. I believe I got you on this one, but some of you might know. What's the next one? It could be an antelope, but it's a what? Huh? No, not a gazelle. Look at the horns. The horns tell it. Impala. Impala. So how do we know? By the shape. Okay? So I just wanted to point something out. You recognize these silhouettes. You don't see the color of them. You don't see the color of the horns. You don't see any of that. But just because of the shape, you understand that you're able to identify these different aspects. You know when you see a man. And there was a bunch of them. I could have put a bunch of them up here. But I got to get going. So I figured I'd just... That's kind of my... I use that as my... What you would call... I usually come up here with something. But this is my illustration for you. Shape is important. Looking at something, understanding what it looks like by how it appears is important. And you can't fake the shape. I could have told you all day long that the elephant was really a dog. And you'd have went, no, it ain't. Based on the shape, I can tell you with 100% certainty it's an elephant because you can't fake the shape. You ought to be writing that down because you're going to need that through this message. You can't fake the shape. And so... In order for us, if we can't fake the shape, that means we got to get our shape right. We got to make sure we got it right. And so let's go to our text. Bereshit, Genesis 41. We'll start from the top and read down just a little. Verse number 1, and it came to be at the end of 2 years' time. They use time there, but it's days, yom, that's the word yom, that Pharaoh had dreamed and saw him standing by the river, by the Nile, and saw 7 cows coming up out of the river, beautiful looking and fat, and well fed amongst the reeds. Now this, when it says beautiful looking, it's referring to the flesh resembling something that is perfect, fat. It's good looking. They had good shape. When you looked at them in the dream, at Pharaoh seeing, he was not doubting that these were good fed beef. He was not doubting that just by what he saw. Then he saw something different. He saw some lean. You can't fake the shape. He was not second guessing what he saw. He saw 7 lean, ill-favored, ill-fleshed. These were well favored in their flesh, or their appearance was well. So we already have precedent set here for us. It's set for us that we understand that he's trying to get us, pulling us into the text to automatically, just for these dreams, that we're dealing with what we see or the shape of something. Because he's seeing, we don't know if he's seeing it in the silhouette or not. But he's not mistaken what he's seeing. Pharaoh knows when he sees a well-fleshed cow, he knows what he's seeing. He wasn't seeing a thin, ill-favored cow. He was seeing a well-fleshed cow. So he's seeing something, and then he sees something else. And they're comparing. They're contrasting each other. Very important to understand as we go, because verses are stepping stones. We're going to different verse, so we're stepping on one to the other to the other. That's how you read the text. That's how God wrote it for us. So we're looking at it, that way it's kind of guiding us along. It's dropping breadcrumbs for us, that when we get to the crescendo, we're in the right place and we're delivering the right message. Very important when you study. Go back and read it several times so maybe we missed that. He's dropping breadcrumbs for us. He's trying to get us somewhere. And he saw 7 cows coming out of the river, beautiful looking and fat. And they fed amongst the reeds. Then he saw 7 other cows coming up after them out of the river, ugly and lean. Lean of flesh. And stood by the other cows on the bank of the river. And the ugly and lean of the flesh cows ate up the 7 beautiful looking and fat cows. Then Pharaoh awoke. So he has this first dream and he wakes up. And we already know his bell got rung just on the first dream. Because it says he was troubled. The word trouble is where we get the word bell from in Hebrew. He rung his bell. Then he goes back to sleep. And he slept and dreamed a second time and saw 7 heads of grain coming up on one stalk, plump and good. Now, if we're dealing with silhouettes, these grains of wheat must have been full, bursting in a silhouette. And then you would see one that's real thin, close to the stalk, not full grown, and not standing upright. Think about it in the picture of silhouette as you hear this story, because this is important. Very important that we understand it in this term. Now, when you start reading Genesis 41, you're not thinking silhouette, because he don't tell us about it till later on, he tells us. Then he said, now go back. Go back and read it again with that in mind. Is this helping you already? Because you get a whole different picture of what he's saying here. Then he says, he slept and dreamed a second time and saw 7 heads of grain coming up on one stalk, plump and good, and he saw 7 lean heads scorched by an east wind coming up after them. And the 7 lean heads swallowed the seven plump and complete heads. Then Pharaoh awoke and saw it was a dream. And it came to be in the morning that his spirit, his ruach, his spirit was moved or troubled. In the King James, it says troubled there, and that word is where we get the word bell from. So understand these terms. He was moved, and he sent and called for all the magicians in the of Mitzrayim and all that its wise men, and Pharaoh related them his dream, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. So he did what he normally did if something happened like that. He reached out to what he was connected to. Understand, Pharaoh, even though he's Semite, he's not connected to the Most High. He knows about the Most High, but he's not connected. There's no relationship there. And so what he does, how do we know that? Because he didn't reach out to Elohim to get his dream interpreted. He reached out to the magicians, the soothsayers. He reached out to those who can look and hear his dream and somehow give him some interpretation. But they could not interpret it. So we have a dilemma, right? We have a dilemma because we have these dreams. We have this image in our mind now. If we're looking at it from a silhouette standpoint, we have this image. We have that which is well-fleshed, eaten up by the ill-fleshed. And we have the one that's plump, eaten up by the one scorched by the east wind. So we have a dilemma here with no answer. So that's why he's troubled. Then the chief cupbearer. So all this is going on. Now, why is it all of a sudden we go from him not finding any interpretation, then the chief cupbearer? Because the chief cupbearer, in his position, he had the ear of Pharaoh, and he was involved in the cabinet. He was involved in everything that was going on. So when he called the magicians and all those who can interpret dreams to come, guess who else would be there? The chief cupbearer, because he had a high position in the cabinet of Pharaoh. He was well known. That's why he was there. So he's witnessing all this. The chief cupbearer is witnessing everything that's going on. And all of a sudden, he had a ding-dong moment. I mean, he's just doing his cupbearing business, and all of a sudden he goes, oh, I forgot Yosef. How did I do that? Then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh saying, I remember my crimes this day. Now, why did he use this terminology? Because he was so struck by what just happened, what he's witnessing, and all of a sudden it comes flooding in. Now, I don't know if I got to explain to you who brought the flood in for the cupbearer, because he's doing cupbearer things. He's not worrying about Yosef. He forgot him. Remember that. We've been exhorted on that already. He forgot him. But all of a sudden, when he's doing his cupbearing duties, all of a sudden, he remembers his crimes, and he calls it crimes, or he remembers his sins. And this is not singular, not a sin, but sins. It's in the plural. He is overwhelmed by what just happened to him. And I can tell you who brought it flooding to his memory. It was Jehovah that caused him to remember. And now he remembers his crimes this day. And when Pharaoh, he said, when Pharaoh was wrought, when Pharaoh splintered, he's telling him, I remember this. Now this is 2 years ago. 2 years early, he's recounting what happened. When Pharaoh was wroth with his servant and put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, each one of us dreamed a dream in one night, he and I, each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. And there was with us a Hebrew youth. Now, in his retelling of this, or recounting what happened, he's recounting 2 years earlier, and in his mind, because Yosef was nothing but a slave, a Hebrew slave, he still has this impression in his mind that he's a youth, but he's not a youth in physical age. Yosef, in this particular telling of the story, he's nearing the age 30 mark, and he's telling this, but the term in Hebrew used here is literally the one that says he's in his youth, because we're going to have a brand new, fresh Yosef come out from the pit. That's why the Hebrew has to use it that way. And so, again, this is a recounting. Now, who's recounting this? The cupbearer. He's telling this to Pharaoh. See, you wouldn't believe what happened. This young Hebrew guy told us our dream, and it happened just like he said. There was a Hebrew youth, a servant of the captain of the guard, speaking of the assassin here, Potiphar. And we related to him, and he interpreted our dream for us. To each man, he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to be as he interpreted for us, so it came to be. He restored me to my office, and he, meaning the baker, he hanged him. He's not mentioned here, but we know who him is. Because we know the story. He hanged him. Now he's telling this to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh was the one who ordered his hanging or his head coming off and impaling him on a stick. I'm sure he wouldn't have forgot. It's just been 2 years. You remember that, the baker? The one you hanged on a stick? So Pharaoh knows exactly what's happening. But what I want you to see is the next verse. Everybody say the next verse. That's our focus verse today. The next verse, there's a lot of stuff going to happen in this next verse, and it's going to happen fast. Then Pharaoh sent and called Yosef. Pharaoh sent and called Yosef, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon or the pit. That's boar there. Brought him out of the pit hurriedly. I'm going to tell you what's about to happen. There's going to be some things happen hurriedly or in a hurry. Things are going to start to happen if you and I will get this right today. If we will get our shape right, which you can't fake. You can't say I'm right. You can't fake the shape. Can't do it. It either is or it's not. And when you're dealing with silhouette, you know, you could dress up a pig in a pink tutu and put lipstick on it. That don't change it from being a pig. First mud hole it finds is going to jump in it, pink tutu and all. Because you can't change that nature of the pig. But how many know we have a nature that needs to be changed? We're not pigs. We're not the animal kingdom. We're talking about man and woman. We have a nature that needs to be changed. And you can't fake a change in that nature. It either is or it's not. And so what we see happening in the 14th verse, Pharaoh sent and called Yosef and hurriedly brought him out of the pit. Where is he? He's in the pit. Go get him now. Let me tell you, when Pharaoh said, go get him now, folks were running. They weren't, okay, I'm on my way. You better run, because he'll put you up there with the baker. They were moving it. They were getting after it. And not only is this term used here, hurriedly brought him, but Yosef responded in a way that now he's finally been called, and he hurries to it. How many know that our Messiah, when the father says, son, go get my children, he's going to hurriedly do this. It's not going to be a slow process. He's not going to say, okay, it's been a while. I've been waiting so long. It's going to hurriedly happen. It's going to happen quickly. And so we're going to go from seeming like it's taken forever, 2 full years of days, to stuff happening fast. I believe that's the spot we're about to hit, stuff happening fast. So fast that you don't have time to learn, you better be learning now. Your learning days will be over. You're going to wish you would have when you could have. When you could have went to Shabbat and heard all the message, not some of it, all of it, you should have been there. And you're going to wish you would have. But I'm trying to tell you today, this is what the text is saying. He's saying this is urgent. When they called Joseph, it was urgent. Pharaoh was in trouble. He was troubled. Go get him now. They were moving on, and it happened quickly. And the next thing it says, and he shaved. Now, shaving in the text has to do with a change from one thing to another thing. So he's not going to be able to. Now, I'm sure that this butler had a silhouette image of Yosef. And his silhouette would have been long hair and a full beard. Remember, Yosef's not a teenager. He's a grown man about to be 30 years old. Now he is 30 at this point, because it's been 2 years. So he's 30. So the butler had an image of Yosef. But when he brings him up, that image has been changed. Shaves his head. Took all his hair off, shaved his beard. He shaved. So we know in the text, when we see the term shaved, it's used sometimes in a military instance when they would go in to conquer the land. They would then take the women of that land, and if they found favor in the eyes of the one who took them, then she had to shave her head and clip her nails. What does that mean? It was changed. She was no longer under the covering of where she was, but now she's under a different covering. Remember, the shaving of the head and the beard is dealing with covering. And so we know that when it says in Corinthians that a man, when he goes before Jehovah, he don't cover his head because Jehovah's his covering. And a woman, her husband is her covering. That's what the text plainly says to us in Corinthians. It's telling us that the husband is her covering. She's identifying that he is my covering. And so as Jehovah covers the husband covers the wife, we have a perfect chain of events in which the authority has been set for all humanity. That's why when we try to bring in different elements and think we can kind of enhance it to help God along the way, that's not the case. He already does what he does, says what he says. So I want you to understand this shaving, again, is important. But then it goes on, it doesn't stop there. And he changed his garments and came to Pharaoh. Let me see that. He changed his garments and came to Pharaoh. Now I'm going to slow it down. I'm going to give you some of these words here that will help you, because we're going to need to have where these words are connected. He changed his garments. The first word is change. And what we have here in changed is H2498 in the ancient Hebrew. We have the het, the lamet, and the pe. And it's talking about pass. Passing on, away, or through. Passing through. So it's like all of them together in definition. And this word is halaf. Halaf, 2498, again, it's dealing with passing on or away. Something is dying and something is living at the same time. So what we see in the dream, we have the good favored flesh and the ill flesh, and then something passes away. What passes away? The good flesh passes away. It's kind of a strange thing. You know, you would think it'd be the opposite. The well-favored, the muscular ones, can eat up the ill-favored, no problem. We wouldn't have no problem with that, because that's how our brain thinks. But it was the opposite. And so sometimes we build up our own image the way we want, and it takes precedent in our life. It's well favored. There's nobody you favor more than you favor yourself. Oh, not me, you know, and we try to be humble. Listen, you like you. Nobody likes you like you like you. We're well favored. But let's remember that silhouette has to change. It has to pass away. This is what's happening to yourself. All of a sudden, this silhouette that's been in the pit for 13 years. 13 years from the age of 17, he was put in the pit from his brother. And that mindset of being in the pit had not changed for him for 13 years. What did they take him out of? The pit? The same boy he was put in at 17 is the same one they take him out at 30. Doesn't change. Hebrew words the same. So in his mind, he's in the pit. So for 13 years, it took God 13 years to get him to change his image. How long is it going to take God to change our image? You know, we get so upset when we got to go through something, and what we're going through is what God's trying to use to get our image right. Might as well do it now. Genesis chapter number 1. I don't like to start at the beginning of the book, because then I feel like I got to go through all of it to prove my point. So that's why I didn't open with that. So I'm close enough to the open of my message to go to Genesis still. Genesis chapter number 1. Look at verse 26. And Elohim said, "Let us make man in our image." Let me see that. Our image. "According to our likeness. And let them rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping creature that creeps on the ground." Verse 27. And Elohim created the man in his image. In the image of Elohim, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So how were we created? In his image, not our image.
That's right.
But because of sin, what was lost in the garden was image and likeness. Was lost. And then we took on our own image and likeness. That's what we all did, everyone. For we all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Now the glory is the radiance of image and likeness. It's the radiance, it's the brightness of image and likeness. We've all sinned and come short of the glory. Why we were short of the glory? Image and likeness was destroyed with sin. And we automatically, by default, we took on our own image and likeness. Whenever you start hanging around with folks, you can go to a different country and you start hanging out and they speak in their language, and all of a sudden you start having a little slang dialect. You start kind of talking. You come to Cajun land, you start talking like Cajuns. That's what you do, because we get close to people and you're not Cajun, but you want to be. If you go hang out in the South, in Alabama for a while, before you know it, you're gonna start talking like an Alabama. That's what you do. You do that because we ought, by default, we start to take on image and likeness, depending on what we're hanging out with. You start hanging out with Yehovah, you're going to start taking on image and likeness. What you're going to do, the more you know about him, the more you can take on his image and likeness. But if you don't know nothing, you're not taking on image and likeness. You've been faking shape. Well, I go over there to Faith Temple. What does that mean? It means zero to God. You can't fake the shape. You're either in his image and likeness or you're not. Now, this is what it says. He changed his clothes, his garment. Changed his garment. And so I want you to see this, because this word again for change is halaf. Means to pass on or away through. Pass by, go through, grow up, change, go on from, pass on quickly, pass away, vanish. And so what had to happen in the pit, while he was in the pit, he had forgotten. Why did he forget him for 2 years? Could God have brought a rush of the memory a year earlier to the butler? Of course he could. He can do whatever he wants. He's God. But he didn't because he wasn't ready. He needs one more day. But that one more day he needed, when it got to that end of 2 years of days, he said, now he's ready. Go get him. And did it happen quickly? Instantly it happened. The moment we get our image right, it's going to happen instantly. That ought to encourage us to start working on what we need to work on. Not on others, but ourselves. It's not my brother nor my sister, but it's me. And we got to work on these things. It's important to God. Why would he put it right here? It's almost like it's a hidden gem right here in the midst of your self-story. He's hiding this gem, but we have image and likeness. There's no doubt about it. Image and likeness is what we lost because of sin. And we don't realize that there's the little things that can cause us not to come into full shape when it talks about what God's purpose and design is for our life. Can you imagine if you'd have gave yourself the throne a year earlier? He might have killed every one of his brothers when they got there. We think, well, we would have put out hopes and maybes. Maybe he wouldn't have. Well, let me tell you, God don't work on hopes and maybes. He says what is and what's not. And he knew Yosef wasn't ready. That's why he didn't bring him out the pit. Now this day, this particular day, after 2 full years of days, he brought him out in a hurry because he's got it now. He's got it. He finally got his silhouette right. He finally got it. His shape is right. Image and likeness has been restored. Now he's ready for the throne. The same thing happened with Yeshua. Yeshua had to maintain image and likeness the whole time he was here. And because of it, death couldn't even hold him. He had to bring him out, set him at his own right hand in heavenly places. Far above all principalities, powers, might, and dominion. Every name that's named. He had to do that for him because he got his shape right. That's why Yeshua said this, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father's silhouette. We don't have to flash it up. We don't have to put the best clothes on. When you have your characters right, you see the silhouette of the Father. That's where he wants us. But notice he shaved because another thing about shaving is the Mitzrites didn't have beards like the Hebrews had. So they wanted, when he brought him, he's going before Pharaoh. He's not, who's a distant cousin. And maybe not everybody knew that, but guess who knew it? Jehovah knew it. And so he wasn't even practicing where he come from, he wasn't practicing. A son of Shem was not practicing the things that Shem practiced. That's how far he went off in image and likeness. You can get way off in image and likeness. You can sit in the same church, sit on the same pew, hear the same message, and your shape be way off. We have to consciously deal with this daily, making sure that our image is right when it comes to looking at what God is saying. And so we see this. It's dealing with change, substitute, alter, change for better, renew. To show newness. So this is all halal. It's to slide by. That is, by implication, to hasten away, pass on, spring up, pierce or change, abolish, alter, change, cut off, go on, forward, grow up. And that's a good one there. Sometimes we got to just grow up. Be over, pass away, pass on, pass through, renew, sprout, strike through. So these are things that we're dealing with this term, he changed. And some, how many know we have to have change? When we first hear the gospel, we come before Yeshua and we can accept his price paid for us. There has to be change in our life after that. There has to be. You don't continue to live the way you was living. You have to change your raiment, change your garment. This seems to be first grade stuff that we're talking about, but it's necessary because these are the principles that we see Yosef going through. Now we look at Yosef's life and we say, we don't really see a lot of problems because you don't see the little bitty little weed that's growing up. Sometimes you don't see the little thing. You don't see that inside the belly it's been stirring a virus that's going to cause excrement to come out. You don't see that. But you got to get your shape right. When you get your shape right, all those things are gone. There's no weeds in the garden. There's no excrement that's left over stuff that's caused by a virus. It's all gone. Nobody likes when they have a virus. Nobody likes it. And you're glad when it's over, aren't you? We all say amen. I'm glad that was over. Well, you know, if you don't get yourself in a position where you can stay away from what causes those things, you're going to keep having them. And you're going along for, you know, 20, 30 years, you're serving God, and you still haven't dealt with this thing that he's telling you to deal with, and you wonder why you still feel like you're in the pit. He can't hurry up and get you out because you won't deal with this thing. We have to deal with it. Let me just run this by you real quick. This seems to be out in left field, but sometimes we need to look at left field a little bit. Galatians 2. We've got to show you how you get justified, how you start the process. I'm going to show you that. And a couple times I went in to take this out and put it somewhere else, and I couldn't. I'm going to give it to you like it was given to me. Called justified by faith. Galatians 2:15. We who deem by nature and not the nations or sinners know that a man is not declared right by the works of Torah. So I want you to understand this. This is Shaul speaking, and you got to understand Shaul's words. If you take his words wrong, you can twist his words to your own delusion. We're going to be careful not to do that today, so you're not caught by that. I'm going to read it just like it says, and I'll explain it to you the best I can. Knowing that a man is not declared right by the works of Torah, but through belief in Yeshua Messiah. That's just a gimme. So what is his focus? Belief in Yeshua Messiah. That's his focus. He's not focused on the Torah, but he's dealing with Yehudim, dealing with Jews. So he has to speak this language because he's trying to take them out of a belief system that they've been faking their shape for a long time. Now you understand it? They've been faking their shape for a long time, and now he's trying to fix it for them. He says, you can't do it how you've been trying to do it. Because you've done twisted it and bent it so much, we don't know what shape you are. Even when we believe in Messiah Yeshua, in order to be declared right by belief in Messiah and not by works of Torah, because by works of the Torah no flesh shall be declared right. Simple. This is simple. These are true facts. By the works of Torah no flesh shall be declared in the right shape. Now we have somebody who puts us in position to be in the right place. We have somebody who starts us out right. But how many of you can start out right and all of a sudden lose your shape? If that wasn't the case, then we sure wouldn't know. We wouldn't know. We don't need to know about image and likeness if once we go with Yeshua, we don't have to worry about our shape being lost. We don't need to understand about image and likeness. Let's just go to Matthew and left of Matthew. Let's get rid of it all, right? That's not the case. You got to know how to maintain shape and likeness until he comes. It's called endure. Hupomeno. Remember, I opened up with that last week. I talked about what Yeshua says. You got to, he that endures to the end, the same shall be saved. What is he saving? Image and likeness. That's what he's saving. But the well flesh gets eat up by the ill fleshed, which seems completely opposite of what should have happened. But that's the facts. Because in that dream, it's not just dealing with 7 good years and 7 ill years. It's dealing with us understanding that the opposite has happened many times. When you try to build up flesh or build up your own shape, the ill flesh comes and destroys it. Now, Yosef had to be put in a position to be in a pit for 13 years. 13 years. And we looked at how this was a kind of a ongoing thing with the children of Abraham, the Hebrews, the Hebrews. This was a kind of an ongoing. Abraham waited 25 years before he had a son. that was promised to him. 25 years. Isaac had to wait for Jacob and Esau to be born. They had to make it a matter of prayer. When she went to Jehovah. Remember, she went to Jehovah and sought Jehovah. But he had to wait. And then Jacob had to wait and serve more years than he wanted to at Laban, because we see this theme happen, this reoccurrence of waiting, waiting, waiting. And last week I opened up with, they that wait upon the Lord, he's going to renew your strength. Very important, because we're seeing that something's happening here. It's when you wait on the Lord and when you commit yourself to him, that he can start to show you how to take shape, the shape that he has designed you to be in from the very beginning. And we'll show you how that's a New Testament concept still today. Never changed. And if while seeking to be declared right by Messiah, we ourselves also are found sinners, is Messiah then a servant of sin? Let it not be. Now watch, I'm going to read it again. And if while seeking to be declared right by Messiah, means you start the journey, right? You accept Christ in your heart, you started the journey. And while you're starting the journey, you're going, all of a sudden, you're found to be a sinner in the midst of that. Do we declare that Messiah is part of that? Let it not be. He didn't cause it. What happened then? What happened is we started losing sight of image and likeness. And the only way we get back to that is through the Torah. Remember, it's not, Torah don't save you, but it points you on how to maintain image and likeness. It's not your salvation. Your salvation is only through Messiah. Only. Period. That's what Galatians is saying here. For if I build what I once overthrew, if I rebuild what I once overthrew, I establish myself as a transgressor. Will you rebuild? Will you rebuild your image back? You know, all of a sudden, we start thinking, well, I got to get, you know, and you have to understand that Yosef had an image problem when his father first gave him the coat, the long robe. He had an image problem. He might have done like this. He could have. Because remember, what has God been dealing with Yosef on? We finally find out what he's dealing with. That image. How he highly thinks of himself. I'm the first son of his love, beloved. I'm not supposed to be in a pit. Well, I'm putting you in a pit to get that out of you. Three times he changed, or his raiment was dealt with. Three times. Once, when it first started, he was heir. So heir is not a qualification that you're in the right shape. Just because you're part of the church don't mean you're in the right shape. Well, I'm heir. Hoop-de-doo. That don't qualify you for right shape. Because when he was heir, and his raiment was taken from him. God is telling us something here. He's saying, listen, I'm having to deal with yourself because he's got to get the right shape. His image got to be right. And that had to be the image, because remember, if he's going to be a type of Messiah, he's got a lot of work ahead of him. Just guess what? If we're going to be a type of Messiah, we got a lot of work ahead of us. If that's our claim, because we go around claiming Christian, being Christ-like, if we're going to be Christ-like, we got a lot of work before we can qualify for that. So in Joseph's case, it took 13 years for God to qualify him. And once he qualified him, he hurriedly got him from the pit and put him in the palace. How beautiful is that? Well, how many know God wants to qualify us today? He wants to, you know, we've been praying for breakthrough for a long time. He wants to give us breakthrough, but we got to qualify for breakthrough. And you can't fake the shape. Can't be done. For if I rebuild what I once overthrew, I establish myself as a transgressor. For through Torah I died to Torah in order to live to Elohim. I have been impaled with Messiah. Now, if you've been impaled, that means you face a death. Now, we had two. One was impaled, the other one was restored. But understand, he's telling us in two separate incidents, but it's dealing with one concept. The concept is one's got to die or pass on, the other's going to be restored. So sometimes we just got to slow our brain down a little bit and say, God, what is it here? And he's so faithful. He's so faithful. He calms your anxiety down, your anxiousness. He calms it down. Sometimes we're anxious when we study. He needs to calm my anxiousness down, Lord, and help me see that one was restored, but the other was hanged. You got to get the one hanged in order to get your shape right. And Yeshua, he qualified all these things as a single person. He was both hanged and resurrected as a single person. We're told it in two dreams in Yosef's setting. But how many know he wants to do this for us? He wants to cause this to be something that's in our life. For through the Torah I died to Torah in order to live to Elohim. Write down Romans 7, 1 through 25, because you're going to need to read that. I'm not going to have time to read it this morning. I might read it during the Midrash. Romans 7, 1 through 25. I have been impaired with Messiah, and I no longer live, but Messiah lives in me. How many see that? Once you've been impaired with Messiah, you no longer live. When it says you no longer live, that's exactly what he wants you to get. You no longer live. And Yosef being in the pit for 13 years, he finally had to let that 17-year-old boy who was crawling around, he had to die to that. Second time, his garment was taken from him. It's when Potiphar's wife took his garment. He was a slave. He was lied on, put in a dungeon or a boar, and he's not seeing any change. He's still going through the same issue. From the time he's 17, he's still going through the same issues. Now, he had everything going for him. He was handsome. He was strong. He was bright. He had wisdom. He had good character, but he didn't have the shape that Jehovah was looking for. So we can sit around and count all of our goodness, but until we get our shape right, we're going to be in trouble. So we got to work on image and likeness. It's very important because that's how we've been designed to be that way. We're in his image and likeness. We've been designed to do that. So he says, I have been impaired with Messiah and no longer live, but Messiah lives in me. And that which I now live in the flesh, I live by belief in the Son of God, because that's important. The only reason we're able to be alive because of the faith in Messiah. Not the Torah, the faith in Messiah. So we have to take our, for lack of a better way to put it, our livingness, our being alive, we have to take that serious, and we have to treat it with the utmost reverence and respect to make sure we're lining up with him or getting our shape right. I now live in the flesh. I live by belief in the Son of Elohim, who loved me and gave himself for me. Very important. I do not set aside the favor of Elohim, for if righteousness is through the Torah, then Messiah died for naught. That's not how righteousness comes. We know it doesn't come from the Torah is not what creates righteousness. The Torah is what shows us how the image and likeness shape has to be. But we have to have access to image and likeness, and the only access to image and likeness is through Yeshua HaMashiach. The only way. We have to be set. We have to be taken. And in order to follow Messiah, first we have to die. Until, let me tell you, if you haven't died in Messiah, chasing image and likeness is already a failure for you. It's going to be impossible for you to get there. You're going to have your image and your likeness in the forefront. It's going to be the thing that rules your life. You're going to have good weeks and bad weeks, and most of the time it's going to be bad. Because you got to die. The old has to die. It has to pass on. Khalaf, it has to happen. Khalaf has to happen. You can't get around it. And that means to change. And when we use that term change, it's exactly what he's saying. What is he changing? His raiment. He's changing his simla. And the word, the simla in ancient Hebrew, is the samit, the mem, and the lamet. It's dealing with image. He changes his simla. Very important word. He changes his simla. It's imaging the form or shape of an image. It's talking about image and figure. Garment as forming to the image of the body. Raiment, clothes, garment, apparel, clothes, clothing. Simla is a wrapper, a mantle, covering garments, clothes, raiment, a cloth. Very important because there's something unique about this simla. It's perhaps by permutation. For the feminine of 5566, which is simel, through the idea of a covering assuming the shape of the object beneath. So when you use a silhouette, it's really telling you the object beneath the silhouette is the elephant. You only see the silhouette, but you don't see the details. You don't see none of the details of the elephant. Completely different when you see a picture of an elephant and you see a silhouette. But beneath the silhouette is the real. We have to take on this permutation. This mutation has to happen in our life where what you see is really, this is what you get. But beneath this is his image and his likeness. You can't project the image and likeness in the forefront. You are who you are. But inside is image and likeness. And you'll be able to tell that by the fruits we bear. It's a dead giveaway. You can't fake shape. So this term simla, perhaps by permutation for the feminine of 5566 through the idea of a covering, assuming the shape of the object beneath, a dress especially, a mantle, apparel, clothes, clothing, garment, raiment. And so, again, this is important because we see the first time these two words, halaf and simla, are used together. The very first time they're used together, we find that in Genesis 35, verse number 1. And Elohim said to Yaakov, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there, and make a slaughter place there, to El, who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother." And Yaakov said to his household and to all who were with him, "Put away your foreign mighty ones." This is a definite qualifier in order to have shape take on the image and likeness of Yehovah. You first have to put away the foreign mighty ones. You can't have foreign mighty ones. You have to put them away. You have to pull the weeds out. You have to do that. You can't, if you don't get rid of that, you're already disqualified. Because we're talking about the first time that this connection that Yosef is told that he changes his garments, halah and simla, used. This is the first time we see it in the text, used together. Not the first time in individual uses, but together. "Put away the foreign mighty ones that are among you and cleanse yourself." That's same thing as shave. That's what it represents. Cleanse yourself. Shave yourself. "And change your garments." How many see that? That's halaf and simla right there. Change your garments. "And let us rise up and go to Bethel." Once you do that, rise and go to Bethel. "And let me make there a slaughter place to El, who answers me in the day of my distress and has been with me in the way which I have gone." So they gave Yaakov all the foreign mighty ones. What did they do? They gave him all the foreign mighty ones. Why? Because Yehovah knew they had them. He knew they were playing the game with him. Going and thinking you can fake the shape. You can't fake the shape before Yehovah. He knew they had, and that's why he's telling Yaakov, before you go to Bethel, he said, you tell them to give me all the foreign mighty ones, because I know they got them here, because they can't fake the shape. I already see it. And so because he knew that, he said, give me all the foreign mighty ones, whatever you have that's been taunting you and harming you and haunting you from your past, you got to give it all to him. You know, we sang the song about surrender. They finished with that song. If you're going to surrender, then surrender. Give up the foreign mighty ones. If you want to take on his image and likeness, which was stole from God's creation because of sin, and that's what we have to get back to. We got to get back to image and likeness. That's what Yosef had to get back to. That's what Yeshua, he's a type of Messiah. That's what Yeshua got back to. There's no getting around it. We have to get rid of the foreign mighty ones. Any likeness of them. And so he says, and they gave Yaakov the foreign mighty ones, which were in their hands, and all their earrings, which were in their ears. And Yaakov hid them under the terebinth tree, which was near Shechem. And they departed, and the fear of Elohim was upon the cities. What happens when you get your shape right? The fear of Elohim will be upon the cities that were all around them, and they did not pursue the sons of Yaakov. How many want to see this happen? Because when you get your shape right, God will affect your surroundings. It'll affect your surroundings when we get our image and likeness right. They did not pursue Yaakov because they knew there's a different group of people here. It's not what you can't say, well, you know, I got saved years ago. That's good. So you got to start somewhere. But let me tell you, along the way, sometimes we get more of us and less of him. And we get that, we got back our image. And we got to change our garments. We have to. In order to be put in the palace, because that's the goal, right? The goal is to get put in the palace. We all want to be in his kingdom. But you don't get there unless you change your garments. Nobody gets there. He says, shave, which means cleanse yourself. So we know we have to be clean. We have to clean. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. This is what he says. Well, where that terminology comes from? It's coming from the Hebraic understanding of what it means to shave. What happens when he has leprosy? He's to shave his head and stay out of the camp for 7 days before he's brought back in. It's representing something. It's telling us you got to get your shape changed. Same thing happened with Yosef. And they departed, and the fear of Elohim was upon the cities that were all around them, and they did not pursue the sons of Yaakov. Because remember, all the cities were against them. They were about to go to war. When they got their shape right, God handled the war for them. How many want him to handle it for you? We got to get our shape right. Next time I want to bring out, I want you to go to 2 Samuel chapter 12. This might be way left field for you. But let's read it together. 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse number 1. Then Jehovah sent Nathan to Dawid, because I used Dawid last week. I'm using him still, because if you have a type, you have a type. And the type should linger. It should continue. Then Jehovah sent Nathan to Dawid, and he came to him and said to him, there were two men in one city, one rich and the other poor. The rich one had flocks and herds, very many, but the poor one had only one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and kept alive, and it grew up with him and with his children together. It ate of his own food, drank from his own cup, and lay in his own bosom, and it was like a daughter to him. I want you to kind of get in the story here. That's why it's language like that. It's to pull you in. Now you got my attention. I love these stories. So he's pulling us into the story. And a traveler came to the rich man who refused to take one of his flocks and from his own herd to prepare one of the way for the wayfaring man who had come to him. But he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. And the wrath of Dawid, what happened is Dawid snapped here. Got enraged. Burned greatly against the man. And he said to Nathan, as Jehovah lives, the man who has done this is a son of death. Also, he has to repay fourfold for the lamb because he did this deed and because he had no compassion. Now, this is the tight spot for the prophet. This is where you want to quit the job. Then Nathan said to Dawid, "You are the man. Thus said Jehovah Elohim of Israel, I anointed you sovereign over Israel, and I delivered you from the hand of Shaul." He said, "I anointed you. I put you in right standing. I gave you image and likeness. I did this. I protected you from Shaul when he sought to kill you. He couldn't kill you because I had my hand on you. I was giving you image and likeness." Then all of a sudden, while you're the king of the people, you're the king of a man after God's own heart, then all of a sudden your image changed, your shape changed. And Nathan's telling him, you can't fake the shape, David. Do you see what I'm telling you? Just because you made it somewhere and you've been given an accolade or you've reached or you graduated, that don't make you everything. Then Nathan said to Dawid, "You're the man, thus Jehovah Elohim of Israel, I anointed you sovereign over Israel, and I delivered you from the hand of Shaul. I gave you your master's house. I did this for you. And your master's wives into your bosom, and gave you the house of Israel and Yehuda." I gave you both of them, the north and the south. Nobody had accomplished this up to this point. But he gave it all to them. They was always divided, fighting each other. But I gave you both houses. So the calling of Dawid was very high. This is very high. He gave them both houses. And what's going to happen in the end time? He's trying to get two houses back to one. He's going to take two and make one. Ephraim and Yehuda come together in the end. This is the heart of God. But how does he do that when you got people who can't get the shape right? How's that going to happen? So understand that Prophet Nathan, he's laid it out because God is speaking through him. And if that were not enough, I also would have given you much more. I wasn't done. You thought I was finished. You reached a false finish line and you took on a different shape. All of a sudden you arrive. Now he's spinning like yourself. I'm the king. I'm so good, I ain't even going to war today. I'm going to send my men out. That was a fatal mistake. Because it was that one time that Dawid did not go to war because he was a fighter. He had never lost a single battle in his entire campaign. He never lost. It didn't matter. From the time he picked the smooth stone and slew Goliath, he had never lost. Because God had given him shape and likeness, but he lost that. I'm trying to tell you today, just because Messiah has given us salvation doesn't mean you can't lose shape and likeness. You can lose image and likeness. Because once sin comes, image and likeness is gone. It flees away just like that. As a snap of a finger, it's gone. And what you got to do, you got to be restored back. And you got to humble yourself. And it's hard to humble yourself when you're the king. When you reach a certain plateau, it's hard to humble yourself when you're the pastor. But listen, whether you're the pastor or not, you have to humble yourself when sin comes or you can't have image and likeness. It'll flee from you. Just because you've reached a certain status is not a qualifier that you have maintained image and likeness. And if you feel like you're in the pit, in order to get out the bore, you have to change your raiment, period. You have to change. So watch what he's telling him here. Why have you despised the word of Jehovah to do evil in his eyes? He's speaking to the king. One thing about Nathan the prophet, he wasn't a yes man. And kings always wanted the prophet to come and tell them what God was doing. How many of you know that the only way any country can be successful, they have to know what the heart of God is. That's why they have to bring in people who have spiritual understanding about the matters of God. If not, I don't care who it is, it could be your favorite, they're not going to have success with any nation unless they understand the things of God. Because we're not just here doing what we want. in the world. It seems like that. It seems like the evil just gets away with it. Let me tell you, God is in control even though it doesn't look like he is. And we have to know what the heart of God is or we're going to get ourselves in trouble. And so here's how we, why have you despised the word of Jehovah to do this evil in his eyes? You have struck Uriah the Hittite with the sword and his wife you took to be your wife, and you have killed him with the sword of the children of Ammon. You allowed the enemy of Israel to kill Uriah. Why'd you do that? Now, does God love Uriah the Hittite? Yes, he loves him. Because he wouldn't have brought it up from the prophet. He wouldn't have brought it up. He saw everything he did. He recognized that what he did was wrong. Thus said Jehovah, I am rising up evil against you from your own house, and shall take your wives from before your eyes and give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of this son. For you did it in secret, but I shall do this deed before all Israel and before the sun. He said, I'm not going to do it at night. I'm going to do it in the broad daylight. This is going to happen to you. And let me tell you, you read the history of Dawid, all this stuff happened. All this stuff happened. And Dawid said to Nathan, I have sinned against Jehovah. Now that's a right response. Not blaming somebody, not pointing the finger. I have sinned against Jehovah. And Nathan said to Dawid, also Jehovah has put away your sin, and you shall not die. The first thing he said wouldn't have been right. Dawid would have died that day. Also, Jehovah has put away your sin, and you won't die. He's telling him, you would have died if you wouldn't have answered right. The first, if you'd have tried to give some excuse. See, we always got excuses why our image is wrong. All we got to do is change our raiment. If you don't like the scene, change your raiment. If you don't like the shape, change your raiment. That's what he's saying. You have to have, this simla has to come into action. It has to. And Nathan went to his house, and Jehovah smote the child of Uriah's wife. Uriah's wife had born to Dawid, and he was sick. And David sought Elohim for the child, and David fasted and went in and spent all night lying on the ground. So the elders of the house stood over him to raise him up from the earth, but he would not, nor did he eat food with them. Now, it's at this time that they believe that Psalms 51 is the prayer that he prayed. So write Psalms 51 down, because you need to go back and reference that. It's when he says, restore a right spirit in me. Cast me not away from your presence. Restore back that intrinsic nature, the right likeness and shape that I had. Because remember, Dawid had it, but he lost it. The point of me reading this second Samuel is to show you, you can get there, but then lose it. And Dawid saw that his servants were whispering, and Dawid perceived that the child was dead. Then Dawid said to his servant, is the child dead? And they said, he is dead. Verse 20, the key verse. David then rose from the ground, washed and anointed himself, and changed his garment. Let me see that. Halaf simla. Again, we're seeing this. So this is a theme now. I believe I've given you enough scripture that we see a theme of what has to happen in even our life. We have to change our garment. And this is what we see from Dawid. What he does here is he changes his garment. And he went into the house of Jehovah and bowed himself, then came to his own house and asked, and they set food before him, so he ate. But where did he go first? Where did he go before he went to his own house? Before he went, did he change himself? Remember, if you got to get your shape right before you go to the house of Jehovah, because he don't work through any back doors or back channels. He's straight up, face to face. eyeball to eyeball. He wants to look you in the face and he wants to get it right. And you can't. Let me tell you, every one of these things that I'm talking about is all possible, and it's only through the blood of Yeshua that we can even access trying to get our shape right. We can't even access it. But the first thing he did, he went into the house of Yehovah and bowed himself, humbled himself. Then he came to his own house and asked, and they set food before him, so he ate. And his servant said to him, "What is this that you have done? You fast and wept because the living child, and when the child died, you rose up and ate the food." Nobody's ever going to understand why you do the things you do when you're trying to get your shape right. It's going to seem odd to them. But you got to do what God called you to do. You're not there to please men. And so they're questioning the king right here because of how he's acting. And he said, "While the child was alive, I fasted and wept. For I said, who knows whether Yehovah should show favor unto me and the child shall live. But now that he's dead, why should I fast? Am I able to bring him back again? I'm going to him, but he does not return to me." We'd understood the principle. He died, now that's what I'm going to do. I might go to him, but he ain't coming to me. So he changed his disposition. He understood the concept. But unless we change our garments, we're going to be running into some problems, constantly running into them. And so we see that this, the term that I gave you earlier was Semel, 5566, that was the root of Semla. It means image, statue, idol. Sometimes we have to make sure that it means to resemble. Semel. Semel, from an unused root meaning to resemble, a likeness, a figure, idol, or image. And again, back to Genesis. We've been made in his image and likeness. We have to resemble him. We have to get back to what he said. And I gave you that in Genesis 1, 26 and 27. I showed you that. And that word, the image there, that word is, it's Salim. The word image there, and it's the Zadi, Lamet, Mem. The Zadi, Lamet, Mem. The Zadi represents one who's humbling himself. It's representing the righteous. He humbled himself. And then we have the Lamet, which is the shepherd, and the Mem, which could mean, it could mean water, moving water, or moving blood. And so what we see here is we have the righteous shepherd is moving his blood in us when we're dealing with this word, Simla. And that's what happened. He said, "I made you in my image." What was he doing? The righteous shepherd created us in his image. He was moving his DNA through us. His DNA was being moved through every vein in our body. And all of a sudden, we have something moving. Unless you got blood moving in throughout your veins, what's going to happen? You're dead. The heart, when the heart's not pumping the blood through the body, what happens? The person's dead. They die. You still have blood in your body, but it's not moving anymore. It's not flowing to the points it needs to get to. Because when blood moves, it's moving the cells that you need to constantly keep you up. You constantly have to be kept up, constantly, especially after sin. After sin, do you know that Adam was running at optimal level? You couldn't get in better shape than he was. Optimal level. But then sin came. Now if his heart stopped, he dies. The day you eat, you shall surely die. What does Satan say? You won't really die. You sort of die. I don't know what sort of death is. I don't want to find out. I think death is death. You don't sort of die. But at one time, Adam was at an optimal level. He was a true superman. True. He didn't have to have a cape on him with an S on it. He was image and likeness, 100%. But because of sin, let me tell you, hopefully we get a picture of how terrible sin is and what it's out to do. It's to destroy you. It doesn't want to help you at all. And sometimes we give whole weekends to sin. We don't even think about it. We just do it. And then we don't realize that it's just building itself. It's trying to change your image and your likeness. Dawid did it in one afternoon. Instead of going to war, he's up on the balcony and he says Bathsheba out there, and he says, well, she's fine. I want her. Go get her for me. He didn't even think about it. It just that fast, it come on him. And before you know it, his image changed. In what world do you think Jehovah would have stole somebody else's wife and slept with her and impregnated her? What world? You understand my point? Dawid knew better. And so God had to send the prophet, and because he changed his raiment, God was still able to use him. If it wouldn't have been for Psalm 51, he would have never been able to use him again. It'd have been over. But because God is okay, so you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have faults in your life. It's okay. But you got to realize those mistakes and try to get back into image and likeness. Very important. Valuable that we understand that. So what we see in likeness, the word likeness there in Genesis, the Genesis account, is dumuth, dimuth. And that dimuth is the Dalet Mem. It means blood likeness in ancient Hebrew. Blood likeness. The picture is a door representing the idea of moving back and forth. And the mem is a picture of water that can represent any liquid, especially blood. Combining these pictures mean the moving back and forth of water or the moving of blood through your veins. This is what he means when he says likeness. And so that's how creation, when it all started, when man's created in image and likeness, and that has to be restored back. And it only can be done through Yeshua. By his blood has to then start coursing itself through our veins, because his blood is the only paid blood that paid in full for our sins. It has to start coursing through our veins. And it's so we have to lay down and take that blood transfusion from Yeshua so we can get back to image and likeness. Other than that, you're not, you might think you're going there. Religion can't get you there. Only the blood of Yeshua can get you there. And that's why I read the Corinthians account. It's not the Torah that's going to get you there. The Torah is the thing that keeps you there. But you got to first get a start. And so, again, what we see is dimuth here. Very important, because it's similar. Like the grape plant takes water from the ground and moves it to the fruit. That's what makes grapes so juicy. They're full of water. And we call it the blood of the grape, right? The blood of the grape, the wine from the grape. But it takes water from the earth and moves it through the vine to the leaves and all of a sudden to the fruit. It's moving it through. If you stop moving, if you cut the vine off, what happens? You're not going to have grapes. That's why he said, I'm the vine, you are the branches. If you abide in me and my word abides in you, you got to stay connected to the vine. And you're not going to stay connected when you don't have the right shape. You're going to feel the embarrassment. You're going to feel odd. You're not going to feel like praying. You want to miss church because you're still living in sin. That's what happens. People start disappearing. Where's so-and-so? I don't know. Because they're living in sin, so they don't have the importance of coming. It's got to be high on your list. You want to have the importance of it. And even when you're here, you're still fighting it. You're still struggling. But when you see somebody start disappearing, you can almost bet on they're dealing with sin and they won't humble themselves. We have to humble ourselves. So we have this dimuth, likeness, similitude. In the likeness of, like as. All of these are similar. The language resembles concretely, model, shape, adverbially, like, fashion, like, likeness, like as, manner, similitude. And so we see these key things. He's trying to get us back. So when we see Yosef changed his raiment, that's what he arrived. He finally got where God needed him to be. Now he can put him in the palace. How many ready for God to put you in the palace? You don't know what's holding it up? We have to get back to image and likeness. That says new CD. And I'm just getting my intro done. So I'm going to stop right here. I'll finish in Midrash, because I got to give you the next few verses are going to show you how under the renewed covenant, that most Christianity flocks to, this precedent is just as strong. Under the, and I'll give you those verses during Midrash. How many see how important it is to take your time through the Word of God? Let Him navigate you by the Spirit. We can't, there's no possible way a human man can navigate the Scripture without set apart Spirit. Can't do it. We have to be led by the set apart Spirit. You can't navigate through it. You're not going to have the wooing of the Spirit to guide you and put you through that. You're not going to see it. It's going to be foreign to you. So we see these wonderful principles laid out for us, and hopefully this will minister to our lives that we see this. Let me tell you another time. Let me just get this off the record. Ruth was told by Naomi. She said, go down to the threshing floor. Before you go, I want you to make sure that you put a perfume on and change your simla, because you got to impress Boaz. That's what Ruth was told. And it goes on and on. You can find all these wonderful principles throughout the text. We see this happening time and time again, that he's wanting us to understand this is critical for our understanding. If we don't change, if we don't halaf simla, we're not going anywhere. We have to have our image and likeness restored. And then listen, you're a very active player in how that happens. You don't create image and likeness. That's been done for us. The blood of Yeshua has to course through our veins. Now you're on your way to have an image and likeness back and become that super man that Yehovah created from the very beginning. Amen? If he ain't going to restore back what he originally created, that's why we had to have a second Adam. Why do you think he brought Yeshua as the second Adam? Because he had what it took coursing through his veins to not succumb to the lie of the enemy. Most people who are struggling with this, they succumb to the lie of the enemy, and sometimes you're lying to yourself by the enemy's leadership. You're saying, I'm good. We'll see. You can't fake the shape. You either are or you're not. Does this help anybody today? It helped me. I can tell you, as I was carrying this last week, I thought some kind of way, last Shabbat I can get to all this plus what I did the first time. And sometimes it's impossible. You can't do it. And so I'm thankful that we was able to get on some of this, kind of get started with it. So I appreciate you today. I thank God for you. I'm thankful for his goodness, but let's work hard on getting our shape right. God, I want to be in your image and likeness. Forget my image. I'm not trying to impress no one. I have to impress him. I have to make sure that he don't cast me away from his presence. Cast me not away from your presence. Restore right spirit. Put the right intrinsic nature back in me. Well, you can't have the right intrinsic nature unless you let his blood course through your veins. Just like the grape has to course, the water has to go through the vine and go out to the fruit and makes it a plump grape. Same thing has to happen with us. And so that should be a valuable. Why do you think Yeshua used this terminology? What is he talking about? Where does he get this from? I can tell you where he gets it from. I'm convinced he's getting it from the story of Yosef when he says he changed his raiment. Very important. Now, I was going to spend more time on shaved, but I'm sure you, if you've been through the Torah with us at any time, you understand that that's talking about you have to clean. In David's case, him going to the house of Yehovah first before he went to his own house. All those things are tied together because he's showing us you first have to acknowledge you have to be cleansed. And you don't have to be cleansed if you don't recognize you made a mistake. If you don't see your sin, then you don't have sin. That's what you think. But you have to first see it. Recognize it. This is not right. This is wrong, and I don't want it no more. Once you do that, then you're ready to change your garment. Now you, because as long as you have sin, you can't have a change of raiment. Never happen. Never will it happen. You have to have, and in Dawid's case, the sad thing is his sin died. And good thing he humbled himself, because he would have died with his sin. The same day, that same day that Nathan the prophet was talking, in the mind of God, his situation was critical. He would have died as soon as Nathan finished saying what he said. He'd have fell dead. But because he postured himself right, and he automatically started letting that blood of the Messiah run coursing through his veins, it started changing him. And he started to get back to image and likeness. How many want image and likeness? Well, let's stand together. We're going to pray and ask God to help us.